Ladies and gentlemen, recorded in Fredericton, New Brunswick, Canada, it's time for the Fight Night Picks podcast with your host, Craig Allen.
It's Tuesday, June 5th. We'll get another banger of an episode coming at you, so get ready. Episode number 16 of the Fight Night Picks podcast. Let's let the beat drop. I got another special episode coming at you. We had a great weekend of fights. I've got two really good interviews today. We've got Tanner Boser from ACB Heavyweight. Got a fight coming up in Brisbane at ACB 88 coming up June 16th. Also, I have ACB's in-ring announcer as well as Road FC, and he just did the bare knuckle FC fights this past weekend with Jeff Houston. So, two interviews coming up. So first of all, I'd like to thank Curtis Howson from First Row Collectibles for sponsoring us. You know, head on over to firstrow.ca, use the promo code FNP at checkout. You're gonna save the shipping there. We're also brought to you by Sisu Mouthguards. I've had one for a number of years now. Definitely the best boil and bite mouthguard I've had. So head on over to sisuguard.com, use the promo code FNP10 at checkout, and you'll save 10% on your order today. So like I said, two big interviews coming up. I went 14 for 18 on my picks. I mean, that's good for 78%. So, I mean, we're on a two-week roll right now. And we're getting back on track. So, a couple weeks where I was hanging around, you know, 60, 62% mark. And we've been above 70 and close to 80 for the last 2 weeks. So, like I said, fast fights from this past weekend. You know, you had M1 Global Challenge 93. That was on Friday from Chelyabinsk in Russia. First pick that I had given you was actually last Monday's up-and-comer. It was Magomed Cobra Magomedov. He was taking on Nikita Podkovalnikov. You know, Magomedov, he was able to dominate the bulk of the fight, and he was able to come away with a unanimous decision win. I was really hoping he'd be able to get a submission, you know, submission heavy, and it was his promo debut. So nonetheless, he was able to get the win and unanimous decision there. Moving on over, you know, you had your main cards. Former UFC Bellator flyweight actually fights out of Nova Scotia, the Halifax area. It was 12-3. Chris Kalaitis, he was taking on 15-6. Alexander Platenko. I had said don't take Platenko simply because 23-year-old guy, young guy, but had 11 pro fights between 2012 and 2013. And I mean, I'm his age, so 11 pro fights when I get out of high school to my first year of high school. I mean, I'd discount those a bit. But, you know, Platenko, he was able to win the fight on the feet. You know, the Canadian looked good. Kalaitis, he was able to get the fight to the ground. His grappling looked good. But the youngster there, Platenko, was good in the scrambles. And striking was good enough. And that's probably what won him the fight. But, I mean, he had Kalaitis rocked at one point. It was a tough one to call. I watched it a number of times. And especially watching it live, I almost had Kalaitis winning it. On points, but Platenko coming away with the victory. Your co-main event bout, you know, it was a middleweight championship bout between Artem Frolov. He's undefeated, taking on former UFC vet Diesel Joe Riggs. You know, Joe Riggs from Maine, taking a lot of fights in his career. I think he had over 50 professional fights. You know, first round was largely probably dominated by Frolov. And then 40 seconds into the second round, Riggs kind of went to step in. He was kind of at a bit of a distance from Frolov, went to step in and went down on the mat. He was in some obvious discomfort. You know, it really looked like he hurt his knee some way, and they had to kind of help him out of the ring. But Ian went over and interviewed him after the fight, and he praised Frolov, and he expressed his desire to have a rematch. You know, but he definitely respected Frolov if he needed to have a fight sooner. And the crowd booed Joe Riggs, which I was kind of surprised by. Usually a little bit more sportsmanship in Russia. But I could see, you know, Frolov seems to want the rematch. But that could take some time to get together. It definitely didn't look like a good injury. None of them obviously are. But it looked pretty bad for Joe Riggs. So hopefully we can see him back in the cage. Your main event, I had said take Shlemenko going into the fight. You know, he's 57-10 going in, taking on 17-6 Bruno Silva. It was kind of tough to gauge. I mean, Silva overall had 14 knockouts of his 17 wins. And Shlemenko had obviously broken Gegard Mousasi's orbital in the first round of their fight in Bellator. That was Gegard's debut in Bellator. So I actually, point by point, I had Shlemenko winning that fight against Gegard. So I figured he'd give Silva some fits. But, you know, Silva making his M1 debut, he was able to come out pretty quick and get the win under 3 minutes. Threw a stiff knee going into the corner. Got Shlemenko in the head and then followed it up by ground and pound. So this could honestly set up a Silva-Frolov title fight in the future. And, you know, maybe whether or not Shlemenko goes back to Bellator or not, I know some of those contracts are transferable. We could end up seeing, I'd like to see it on, honestly, Joe Riggs take on Alexander Shlemenko, but we'll see how that shakes out. And a Silva-Frolov title fight would make sense. Also this past weekend, you had LFA 41 on Friday night from Prior Lake, Minnesota. Got my two fights right on that card. So the last three fights on that main card actually all ended by guillotine. You had Kilis Moda. I said take him. He was 11-0 going into the fight. He was able to stay unbeaten, getting the early second round guillotine. He's now 12-0. And in the main event, I had said take Thiago Moises, and he was able to push his record from 9-2 to 10-2, and he had a late second round guillotine. So lots of submissions on that card. And another good one from LFA. You see a lot of those LFA guys. I mean, recently we've seen a number of them come up to the UFC and find success. So definitely a card or an organization that you have to, you know, keep your eyes peeled, because there's some really good up-and-comers on those cards. Biggest card this past weekend, you had UFC Fight Night 131 from Utica. It was kind of another sleeper card from the UFC. You know, their last three have been a little bit lackluster, to tell you the truth. So it's been kind of hard to get fans interested. I mean, I even saw Adam Martin here recently kind of say that he's been taping the shows and then watching them the following morning, because it's kind of hard to stay up for some of these cards. I mean, I know this past weekend the card in Utica didn't get over till almost 2 o'clock in the morning. So a little tough to follow there for some. So, I mean, going down through the card, in total, I went 10 for 12 on the fights that were on there. Fights of note, you had your main event between Jimmy Rivera and Marlon Moraes. I said take Rivera. I mean, he hadn't lost in 10 years. He'd won 20 straight fights. And the one thing that you had to watch out with Moraes was that he had knockout power. And wasn't he able to come out quick in that first round and threw a nice head kick, nice left high kick, and finished the fight at 33 seconds by ground and pound. So, I mean, that sets up a lot of different matchups, top bantamweight division. You could see him fight a guy like Dominic Cruz, all sorts of different matchups. And then in your co-main, you had Gregor Gillespie taking on Vince from Hell Pichel. And I had said, watch out, you know, Pichel 11-1. He had some injuries that resulted in some setbacks for him. Hadn't fought in a while, you know, a lot of time between starts, if you will. And he had 8 knockout wins in those 11. So Gillespie 11-0, 4 of those wins coming in the UFC. And I mean, he was able to dominate in that fight. You know, he dominated with takedowns. His movement on the ground was good. I even heard during the broadcast, somebody had mentioned that, kind of asked, how would he be able to stack up against Khabib? And I mean, that's pretty high praise right there. So he was able to get the late second round arm triangle submission win, and definitely put on a show for the crowd there in Utica. Also on the card, you know, you had Walt Harris taking on Daniel Spitz. Honestly, for me, that was a tough one to call. I took Harris just at the last second because, I mean, Harris, of his 10 wins going into the fight, 10 were by knockout. His last two losses, you couldn't really count. So going into it, take him at, you know, 10-5, and a lot of power. And didn't he feel out Daniel Spitz? Spitz wasn't really able to do much, and he was able to get the knockout. So 11-7 for Walt Harris. Hopefully he's able to kind of break through that ceiling a little bit and crack that top 15 ranking in the UFC heavyweight division. And if he keeps it up, he's definitely going to be there, because it's quite a thin division, as we all know. Another fight that was on that card that it was kind of strange for me, but you had Jake Ellenberger taking on Ben Saunders, a couple of guys that have had long careers, and I had said it was going to be a dirty knockout for somebody, and wasn't Ben Saunders able to hook a knee up in the first round, catch Ellenberger in the liver, and that was all she wrote. It was a knockout right there. Ben Saunders is quite elated after the win. I haven't seen someone that happy winning a fight in a while. So it was good to see for Ben Saunders. And he said that he's in it for the long haul. He wants to go all the way up and win the belt. So good for Ben Saunders. Puts his record at 22-9-2. And for Jake Ellenberger, from 2013 until now, he's now 2-8 in the UFC. Not really sure what's going to happen there. I had said on Twitter, I noticed that he had taken his gloves off. Still had the wraps on, but it was a little strange when they went to race on understand that that had happened. So I was kind of worried or concerned, I guess, that possibly that could have been Ellenberger's last fight in the UFC, but we'll see what happens. Another few fights, you know, you had Julio Arce in a great battle against Daniel Taymor. You had Sam Alvey, Jean Volante, Alvey able to come away with a split decision loss. I thought it was Alvey's fight. You had Daniel's brother David beating Nick Lentz. That was the only other fight that I got wrong other than the main event. I thought Lentz, you know, going into the fight, 7 knockouts, 11 submissions, 10 decisions on his record. Thought it was going to be a pretty easy win for him. He's had a lot of success, whether it's on the feet or on the ground. And he had beat the likes of Will Brooks even recently. You also have Bilal Muhammad, and I mean, what a guy. He trained and competed during Ramadan and made weight no problem and was able to get the win over Chance Rencontre in his UFC debut. And you also had Desmond Green on the card taking on Gleison Tibau. He was able to get the win. A fight that was supposed to be on the card but was scrapped due to chapped lips. You had Jessica Aguilar taking on Jody Escobel. And I guess day of the fight, Aguilar couldn't make it into the fight. They checked with the commission, and that commission in New York decided that the fight couldn't go on. So missed that one. You had Nathaniel Wood winning his UFC debut against Johnny Eduardo. And in one of the strangest knockouts I've ever seen, Jose Torres was somehow able to beat Jared Brooks. Brooks dominated the first round of the fight. It was Torres' UFC debut. I had said pick Torres, well-rounded. 15-0 as a pro and an amateur, 7-0 as a pro, and Jared Brooks 13-1. I mean, look, Brooks had lost his last fight by split decision against Deveson Figueiredo, so it was a tough fight to call, but Brooks dominated the first round of action, and he had Jose Torres kind of up on his back, and it almost looked like a UFC, I don't know, finishing move maybe, and they both kind of went up in the air like you were going to jump off, you're going to do a tandem jump off a diving board in a pool, and Torres landed and Brooks landed, and just the awkward way that it happened, Jared Brooks got knocked out. So Torres was the winner, and you know, he was grateful, I guess, for the win, and it'd be nice if we could see a rematch there. So that was the all the action from this past weekend. Now I'm gonna change gears a little bit. Had an interview today with Tanner Boser. You know, the Bulldozer Boser. He's a heavyweight with a fight coming up on the 16th, ACB 88 from Brisbane, Australia. So here's my conversation with Tanner. So you've got ACB 88 coming up on the 16th. You're taking on Chase Gormley. What's the mood like right now?
Oh, well, I'm feeling good. You know, the really, really high intensity training's done. So this week it's still high intensity, but lower volume, lower impact. I'm peaking good, and I feel good, man. Ready to go.
Awesome. What's it like fighting for ACB? What's it been like, anyway?
Well, I like fighting for ACB. You know, they treat me good. The pay is good, and I like going to fight all over the world. I think it's pretty awesome. So I'm having a good time.
That's awesome. I mean, they seem to put on a really good show. They seem to be one of the better promotions at getting the fans into it, giving the fighters a chance to be, you know, an individual per se, I guess. They give you a longer walkout than it seems in the UFC or in Bellator. To your point, like you just said, what's it like fighting outside of Canada? Like, is it a lot different than when you fought in Unified or even when you fought in Montreal for ACB?
Yeah, well, it depends where we're at, you know. Like, in Russia, I find the fans are very respectful. Mm. Like, you know, you don't have that drunk guy in the crowd yelling, when you're, you know, the fight's on the ground yelling, knee him in the head, because, you know, that guy's everywhere in North America.
Yeah, exactly.
Dubai was a pretty, they definitely had guys they were backing, but there was a lot of guys in Dubai from nearby countries. Like, there was a few Afghani fighters on the card, so I think a large part of the crowd was Afghani.
Okay.
But, yeah, the Dubai crowd was good. Even the Montreal crowd was good. I mean, I'm the hometown guy there, since I'm fighting an American. So, wherever I've been, man, it's always just a different experience. And I like it. I love fighting at home, too, and I like fighting anywhere, really.
Yeah, no, that's good. When do you fly out to Australia?
I fly out Saturday, so I'll arrive there Monday morning, their time.
Okay.
And the fight's Saturday, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, it gives you a lot of time to kind of get ready and get acclimated, eh?
Yeah.
And then when do you get back from going there?
I'm going to stay about a couple weeks after.
Wow.
So, yeah, I'm all the way on the other side of the world. I might as well.
Yeah, no, that's awesome for sure. Gives you a chance to get a trip out of it anyway.
Yeah.
So, I heard on the Parting Shot, James Lynch, that you've got one fight left on your contract after this one when you're taking on Gormley. Is there a chance that you want to stick around with the promotion afterwards?
Yeah, I'm going to.
Yeah.
The only reason I could see me not getting re-signed by them were I were to absolutely blow it in my next two fights and just get, like, murked twice in a row. But barring that, I'm pretty sure they're going to want to re-sign me, and I'm just going to keep re-signing with them.
I mean, that'd be awesome because, I mean, like, I went on their website today and it said you're ranked about number 3 in the promotion, and it'd be good if you could fight Vakayev again for the title, so that'd be good.
Yeah, I would love a rematch with Vakayev, whether it be for the title or not. I'm flattered I'm that high in the rankings, but I don't think I'm that high in the rankings. In my own mind, I'm somewhere around, like, 6.
Okay.
You know, 5 or 6. I think Vakayev's going to fight Amir Ali Akbari.
Yep.
So you can't ever count Vakayev out. He's tough as hell. He beat Goltsov, which is enormous.
Yeah.
If he were to beat Ali Akbari, then there's a possibility if I keep my win streak alive. But I got tough guys ahead of me every single fight. So it's hard to say. But I know one day I'm going to rematch Vakayev. If Ali Akbari takes him out, there's probably a high chance I'd fight him in a rematch at some point, yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, always looking ahead, are there any other possible matchups you'd like to see yourself in?
I like challenging myself and fighting all the top guys in the world. You know, so several of the guys in ACB are top guys in the world. You know, make no mistake, Amir Ali Akbari, Smolderev, I believe, to be high up there.
Yeah.
Goltsov. Like, these guys are world-class guys. You know, even on Fight Matrix, several of them are in, like, the top 20.
Yeah.
You know? However, I think if the stars were to align and it's, like, I think my chances are all right. They're not. You know, there's obviously other options, but Frank Mir says his next fight's going to be an ACB in August, and he doesn't have an opponent officially yet. I don't know if they have a plan or if they got a guy, but if I were to win this fight and be on a 3-fight win streak, which again is a feat in of itself, like Gormley's a top customer.
Yeah.
But if that were to happen and somehow I were to get the fight with Frank Mir, that would be awesome.
I mean, yeah, that'd be a great matchup for sure to see you guys in a fight. I mean, like you said, stars align. Is there any chance at all that if you get past Gormley, is there a possibility you could fight on that Calgary card July 28th?
No, I have one more fight for ACB, and I'm not trying to fight anywhere else. I fight for ACB, and I'm happy there, and I don't give a shit where any other promotion's going. I'm not trying to get on those cards.
All right, that's great to hear. Definitely a company guy, and like we've said, I mean, ACB, they put on great shows. So you're taking on Chase Gormley on the 16th. You know, he had 2 UFC fights against Struve and Schaub. He had 4 in Bellator, had a loss to Kharitonov. Got knocked out in his last 2 fights. You know, 6 of his 7 losses are by knockout. We kind of talked about your training camp, but was it a lot different of a training camp than you had in your last fight against Linderman?
No, the training camps are pretty much the same. I mean, we expected Linderman to have a different game plan. We thought Linderman was going to try and drag me into a brawl, but really Linderman actually tried to take me down most of the fight.
Yeah.
I think Gormley isn't going to press forward as hard as Linderman. I could be wrong, but I think Gormley is going to for sure try and fall back on his wrestling because he's a good wrestler. He comes from a wrestling background. And it's probably his strongest suit. He can strike too, obviously, but we are prepared to deal with a big, strong wrestler this time around. And training camp's mostly the same, just a little bit of different emphasis on different things.
Yeah, I mean, and that's good to hear, because in that Linderman fight, it seemed like he wanted to try and clinch up in the corners and try and grapple a lot, and you had a lot of success against him there. So, I mean, if you're preparing for a fight just like that, it should go according to plan.
Yeah, I expect Gormley to be a better wrestler than Linderman, and I expect him to be physically stronger than Linderman, although Linderman was deceptively strong. He was a lot stronger than I figured he would be, actually.
Yeah?
Yeah, he was a pretty strong guy. Like, he was stronger than a lot of guys I fought. He doesn't look it, but that guy's strong. I think Gormley will be stronger. I think he'll be bigger.
Yeah.
And, well, Linderman weighed in at 265, actually, but I think Linderman will have, like, a little more, like, muscle mass. But, yeah, like, he's a good wrestler, but, I mean, if you even look, guys seem to think that I'm an easy takedown for some reason, because, like, in the past, I was taken down, like, this is the fight I attribute to it, is why people think that it's a good idea to do, is because when I fought Kazbek Saidalev on a week notice in Akhmat, he took me down a bunch of times. If you look at, even since then, like the Smoldarev fight, Smoldarev took me down twice. One was a beautifully timed takedown that would have got anybody when I was throwing like an overhand at him or something. And the other one, he got me down once against the cage. That's a giant human who's a world champion sambo fighter, a judo black belt, and a master of sports and wrestling. He was able to take me down against the cage once. You know, these guys want to game plan it, be my guest, but I'm not an easy takedown, and when you're in there, you're going to be eating all sorts of greasy elbows and shit.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, I wish you nothing but the best of luck next weekend. It was awesome to have you on. How can people find you online and get in touch with you?
Well, at Bulldozer Bozer on Instagram and Twitter, Tanner Bulldozer Bozer on Facebook.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Tanner, for coming on. Hopefully we can have you on again.
Yeah, thanks. Appreciate it.
All right. Awesome to have Tanner on the podcast. I mean, that's a great interview for sure. Major heavyweight contender in ACB's heavyweight division, and he's got a fight coming up in the next couple of weeks. So what more can you ask for, really? Like to take the time right now to thank First Row Collectibles for sponsoring us. You know, head on over to firstrow.ca. I'm on there right now, actually. You know, hockey playoffs are in full swing. You've got Vegas taking on the Caps in the finals. You know, on the website, they've got some Marc-Andre Fleury rookie cards, Jonathan Marchessault rookie cards, autograph rookie card. For baseball, George Springer rookie card. You know, they've also got a 50 cent bin. I'm looking at, Goldust and R-Truth. I mean, the possibilities are endless on the site. If you're a sports fan, you definitely want to check it out. Bret Hart autograph card. Even old episode or Sports Illustrated's on there as well. So head on over to firstrow.ca, use the promo code FNP at checkout. You'll qualify for free shipping on your order. And to our American listeners, note that on First Row, all the prices are in Canadian dollars. So you're going to be saving roughly 25% if you head on over to firstrow.ca. We're also brought to you today by Sisu Mouthguards. Like I said at the top of the program, I've had a Sisu Mouthguard for a couple years now, and I beleaguered the point, but the one game I didn't wear my mouthguard in the last few years, I lost my front tooth. And let me tell you, it was a pain, both a physical pain, but a pain in the wallet too. I mean, I spent probably $1,000 out of pocket trying to get that fixed, missing time from work. If you go out and head on over to sisuguard.com, use the promo code FNP10, you'll save 10% on your order. It's a boil and bite mouthguard. I've got a link to their website on my website, fightnightpicks.net, but it's a lot thinner than most of the boil and bite mouthguards. You can talk within it. If you're in MMA, you can talk to your corners, you can drink, you definitely could do a post-fight interview with one in as well. So head on over to sisuguard.com, use the promo code FNP10 at checkout for 10% off your order today. All right, so you guys got a chance to hear my conversation that I had with Tanner Bozer. Really special to have him on. I mean, number 3 ranked heavyweight in ACB. Why don't we switch gears and hand it on over to Jeff Houston? You might know him as the ACB, Bare Knuckle FC, Road FC in-ring announcer. He cut his teeth in professional wrestling and boxing as well, so we'll hand it over to Jeff Houston. You got the rare week off. That doesn't happen very often, does it?
No, it's something that I'm not too used to, but I spent some time at home and I'm realizing, is this really my home? I mean, home's really more airports and hotels and everything like that for me.
Yeah, for sure. So where's home base for Jeff Houston?
San Antonio, Texas.
San Antonio, Texas. Yes, sir. So I'm sure a lot of my fans would like to know, and listeners, how did you get involved in announcing fights?
Well, I'd always loved the position, even when I was a little kid. You know, I was never the top athlete in any sense of the word, but I loved how a ring announcer was able to capture an entire audience, make them go nuts, and he didn't even have to throw a punch. And I thought, that is the coolest job ever. So I started off small when I was about 25 on independent pro wrestling, kind of cut my teeth there, learned the finer points. And then I think about 2005, 2006, I started getting into pro boxing and MMA, and been doing it ever since for 15 years now, this April.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And it's given you the chance to travel the world as well, which has got to be great.
It's definitely a plus. You know, Aerosmith once said, life's a journey, not a destination. I think that is Bass at where it's actually when you've been traveling, you know, on overnight flights. I'm like, I am actually foaming at the mouth for the destination, because the journey there on a 17, 18-hour flight,
yeah,
give me that destination.
So you've been involved for quite a while in the fights. What do you do to get pumped up for a fight? Do you have any rituals before the card starts? What do you do?
I actually share a little ritual with Michael Schiavello. It's something, because I was such a huge wrestling mark when I was growing up. And this can sound really weird, but I actually listened to old school wrestling entrance themes to get me pumped up.
Yeah? What's a favorite of yours?
I used to always get pumped up to things like, you know, Ultimate Warrior, you know, that awesome cymbal set. But right now, there are two of them that really pump me up right now, and they're the entrances from Shinsuke Nakamura and Bobby Roode, Glorious. That one, just, it's so incredibly corny but amazing at the same time, and I listen to that, and it just, it's weird what can center you before a fight, but it just centers me.
No, I mean, that's totally fair. I've heard some different guys, they get into 80s pop music. Others, it's, yeah, I mean, former pro wrestling songs. And it's kind of been nice to see the resurgence almost of professional wrestling in North America, especially with New Japan Wrestling holding events in North America.
Well, New Japan, in my opinion, has grown to an entertainment aspect. I mean, it's basically all bodies and less substance. I mean, I would love to see the resurgence of gimmicks.
Yeah.
I've always been an 80s and 90s guy, and I'm, you know, back in the 80s and the 90s, you could be 468 pounds, look like you never worked out a day in your life, but if your name was Earthquake, you had a job.
Exactly. So when you're calling a fight, you know, you're sitting there next to the cage, what do you do while the rounds are going on?
Well, I mean, obviously, I'm more of the in-cage announcer. I really don't call fights, you know, as they happen. What I'm doing is, you know, because a lot of times with certain promotions, you know, I'll provide post-fight interviews. So I'm looking at the parts of the fight that kind of stick out to me, and whether or not somebody I feel is holding back or somebody's in there to just kind of let it all fly. And I've always, I respect every fighter who steps into the cage, but I'll be honest, in this day and age, when you're trying to make an impression, I always respect the fighter that decides, you know what, I'm throwing it out. I'm out here to make an impression, and I'm going to make an impression. And they go out, and they just let them fly. I have a little bit more respect for fighters who put it on the line, because in this day and age, you never know who's watching.
Exactly, for sure. So, I mean, right now, you're involved with different promotions like ACB, Road FC, and then this past weekend, you called the Bare Knuckle FC. What was that like?
It was the most pleasantly surprising combative sports event that I've ever called in my life.
Yes, sir.
Out of 15 years, I definitely think that this was the most memorable, and it was definitely the most memorable for a bunch of reasons. Number one, it was the first.
Yeah.
It was the first legalized, state-sanctioned. Now, there have been other bare-knuckle promotions that have been legalized, that have done shows throughout the United States, you know, very sparingly, but they've always been done on Indian reservations.
Yep.
That have not been state sanctioned. And as you know, the Indian reservations, they have their own athletic commission, so they can do everything from within. This was the first legalized, state sanctioned bare knuckle event in U.S. history. And that's what made it so special. And not only that, I mean, I'm sure that you were watching the fights. You saw that we had one of the most unique fighting ring platforms that has ever been seen. It was called the Squared Circle. And I remember seeing it, and I was like, oh, my goodness. I mean, these guys are for real. I mean, these guys are not looking to have just one gun just so they can have their names in the history books. This is going to be something special.
And I mean, I totally agree with you. The different clips from the Joey Beltran, Tony Lopez fight, I mean, they've been making the rounds on the internet. You had Rico Rodriguez, Beck Rawlings, and DJ Linderman on the card. And I mean, it was special to have you, you know, in the ring. And then at the same time, they had M1 Global announcer Sean Wheelock calling the fights as well. So they definitely really put it all together and put together a great show. And hopefully we're able to see more cards from them in the future.
And don't forget also joining Sean Wheelock on commentary with former five-time world light heavyweight boxing champion Antonio the Magic Man Tarver. You know, he lent his voice to this cause. Also, we had Big Dan Mergliata. We had Jacob Stitch Duran. I mean, you know, we had a plethora of fight celebrities. And each and every one of them had the same take on where they thought that this new concept is headed. You know, and of course we had, you know, our doubters and some of, and I've been, you know, reading that a lot of people think that certain fights were fixed, you know, like especially the one that I actually saw the most feedback on was the Bobby Gunn fight.
Okay.
And a lot of people were saying that Eddie Dale Costa took a dive on that. Well, as being ringside watching the entire fight, I'm here to say that that is absolutely 100% not true. Because if you actually watch the fight, number one, you have to remember that Bobby Gunn was the most seasoned person on that card. There had only been one other person who had had a quote-unquote bare-knuckle fight, and that was Sam Shoemaker.
Yeah.
And we all know how that fight turned out, 18 seconds with a haymaker that was thrown from, man, that looked like it was thrown from hell to heaven.
Exactly.
That was absolutely outrageous. But what happened with Bobby, Bobby was the kind of guy who said that he wasn't going to throw punches away, and that's exactly what happened. It was that perfect liver shot. And anybody who's been involved in boxing knows that when you get that perfect liver shot, it's like hitting an off button.
Yep.
Everything just shuts down, and that's exactly what happened. So he got back up. He went to toe the line again so that he could commit to the fight. And then Bobby Gunn came with another overhand haymaker and another shot and another liver shot.
Yeah,
it was very close. And then that was it. I'm here to tell you that was not fixed in any way, shape, or form. It was a perfect shot from a seasoned bare knuckle professional.
Exactly. And I mean, we saw something similar this past weekend in the UFC with Ben Saunders hitting Jake Ellenberger with a knee, and it just connected exactly where that liver was, and that was it for the fight. So in no way, shape, or form were any of the fights fixed for Bare Knuckle FC. And I think I saw on Twitter, were you on the canvas giving one of the intros?
Oh, no. That was Road FC.
Road
that
FC.
That was Road FC that I did that, yeah. The Road FC feel is exceptionally over the top, and a lot of Korean fight fans actually like that because, you know, it's a perfect blend of, you know, pure fighting as well as, you know, giving some of the past greats another shot. And, you know, it was just something that I tried, something that I experimented with, and I said, you know something, you know, I'm going to try something a little bit different. I'm not doing this to put the spotlight on me. I'm not doing it so that I can get on podcasts or people can go ahead and say, oh my God, I can't believe the ring announcer did that. I'm doing that so that I can give the fighter an introduction he'll never forget. He or she will never forget.
And I mean, that's great for sure. And I think the next Road FC event coming up is next month, right?
It's going to be July 28th in Wonju, South Korea, which is the headquarters for Road FC. It's about just a little under 2 hours outside Seoul, and it's going to be going down at the Wonju Gymnasium. I've done about 3 events at that location, and it's a really cool, you know, country village out there. When I say village, I mean there's well over 300,000 people there, so I mean it's a village on, I guess you could say, East Asia standards. But it's gonna be a great show. It's gonna be a great show. I believe the main event is the unification bout for the light heavyweight championship, and that's gonna be Jung Won Cha against Young Che. And that is just gonna be a bar burner right there, because I think that Jung Won Cha is he's one of the most impressive light heavyweights I've ever seen.
Yeah, I mean, I had a look down through the card, and yeah, you've got that title fight at the top, and from there, I mean, it's a really well put together card. And I guess one of the questions I have for you, it's got to be tough, you know, you're going from ACB in Russia, or I mean wherever they set up. You've got Road FC in South Korea. You've got fights here in North America. How difficult is it to try and get the pronunciation right?
A lot of ring announcers who whine and complain about how tough it is to announce other names. I'm like, really? I'm like, take your time, do your research, and also do things phonetically. It's always easier that way if you just break things down and try to act instead of trying to kind of work against the grain, like I like to say, when it comes to pronouncing things.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I find even in my own research, what I'll do is I cover global mixed martial arts and combat sports. And the thing that I'll do is I'll find a really good ring announcer like yourself, someone that definitely takes the time, and then try and work that into my pronunciation, whether it's, you know, like you said, sounding things out phonetically and just trying to get it right. Cause it's always special when you do pronounce some of those more difficult names properly.
Well, the way that I see it, especially coming from a seasoned announcer's perspective, if you're not going to take the time to correctly pronounce a fighter's name, then do yourself a favor. Don't step foot in the cage. Don't walk between the ropes. Go back out there, buy yourself a ticket, have some popcorn and a soda, and sit out there with the fans. Because that's where you belong if you don't feel that that's not important.
Exactly. I agree with you 100%. So coming up next weekend, you've got ACB 88 from Brisbane, Australia. When do you fly out there?
That one I leave a little earlier because it's going to be an insanely long 16, 17-hour flight, you know, just to Sydney, and then I fly into Brisbane. But the card itself, I mean, you know, it's an ACB card, and when it comes to ACB, you can only expect top talent. I mean, you know, the main event itself alone, I mean, Chris Camozzi and Thiago Silva. I mean, that right there, I mean, you know, that's just, you know, that's an awesome 205. That's going to be right there, the light heavyweight bout there. On the card, we've also got Luke Barnett, you know, Brett Cooper, Adam Townsend. And this one I'm actually looking for. It's a super heavyweight. It's going to be Tanner Boser going up against Chase Gormley. And, you know, I follow both of them, both of these heavyweights, and I'm looking forward to that one especially. But like I said, the main event right there, Tomoshi and Silva, that's going to be amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad you even mentioned that heavyweight bout, because also on this podcast, we've got an interview with Tanner Boser and what he thinks about this fight, how he's trained for it, and then what he thinks might be next for him and for the heavyweight division in ACB.
Well, you have to remember, I mean, his last fight was against, ironically, who opened up Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships for us just this last weekend, DJ Linderman.
Exactly.
He fought DJ Linderman in Dubai. And Tanner, I mean, I love DJ. I love DJ because it's like nothing you can do hurts this guy, no matter what you do. I mean, you saw the end result after he fought AJ Adams on the opening bare knuckle. And I'm going to tell you, I saw him the next day, stitched up, eyes closed, had a smile on his face, and he was looking like everybody, like, what?
Wow.
He's like, oh, don't worry about that. He's like, don't worry about that. I'm fine. He's like, I'd be ready to do that. I'd be ready to do that all over again. But Tanner, you know, he's up and coming. You know, he's got a great record. He's 14-4. And he's going up against someone with a similar record, Chase Gormley at 14-7. So it's going to be interesting to see how he prepares for a slightly bigger opponent. Because, you know, Chase is a big boy.
Yeah, I think their styles really match up well. I mean, both guys are good on the feet. I think Gormley's going to try and take him down, but we saw it in that Linderman fight.
Well, wrestling background, of course.
Yeah,
with his wrestling background, of course, he's going to try to do that. But, you know, I mean, I just think that, you know, I mean, Chase Gormley's, what, about 6'3", 6'4", you know, and, you know, Tanner Boser, you know, I mean, you know, he's about 6'2", and everything. But Tanner is definitely a more athletic heavyweight. He's not a huge heavyweight. He's about 6'2". I think his last weigh-in, he was about 257 pounds. So he's not huge, but he's got a great stand-up striking game, and it's going to be interesting to see where he takes that against that. Because, like I said, like you said, I think that Chase is going to weather the storm a little bit, and then he's going to try to take it to the ground.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, yeah, the card stacked top to bottom. It's another great card for ECB. They've got a lot of fighters from all over the globe, as well as some Australians on the card to please those hometown fans. And you've also got Marston Held from what I've seen on there as well. So another big name.
I mean that's what ECB is used to. I mean, you know, these guys are, you know, they're taking the world by storm. I mean, you know, 24, 25 events a year, and not just one regional area. I mean, it's literally, we've gone all over the world. I mean, I started with them in February. And since then, and this is just since February, I've been to Dubai, Azerbaijan, Italy, England, Moscow. I mean, you know, all over. Slovakia, I mean, you know, and we've got so much more finishing out the year. So I mean, these guys, and it's a top draw promotion, 100% professional across the board. You know, we do, I mean, you know, we've got Herb Dean, in my opinion, the greatest referee that there ever was, a very good friend of mine, who's our head official, and we've got a dynamic commentary team. You know, we've got Frank Mir and Brian Lacey, and they're they're really great. They're really great at calling. And Frank, you know, I mean, like I said, Frank Mir, what else can you say?
Yeah, exactly. And hopefully we'll get to see him fight possibly in the near future. I know you'd mentioned August as a possible, fight in ECB. So that'd be pretty special.
I think so. I mean, you know, he's got a lot of miles left in the tank. I mean, this last fight, you know, he even said, you know, it was a learning process for him. And, you know, win, lose, or draw, he went in there with the absolute best that there was at one point in the heavyweight division. So, you know, I got nothing but mad respect for Frank, because, you know, he goes out there, he gets it done, and what else can you ask from a heavyweight? But I wanted to kind of go back, if I may, to bare knuckle, because I just, I'm still smiling ear to ear by everything that we saw. I mean, you know, everybody thought that, you know, that the main fight on that one was going to be Beltran and Lopez, and it was, but a lot of people are also seeing the technical prowess that was in the Beck Rawlings and Alma Garcia fight. And even though that one was stopped via doctor stoppage, it still was a fantastic fight. But what was amazing about that one is how comfortable Beck Rawlings looked in a bare knuckle capacity.
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. I was surprised, at the end of her UFC tenure, she didn't look very good. Far more losses than wins, of course. But yeah, going into the ring, it was like that's what she's done her whole career. She looked flawless, I guess, in her debut. Really,
she looked amazing. And not only that, I mean, you have to remember also shortly after her victory, she ends up getting a beautiful tweet from Conor McGregor, saying, hey, you looked good. You know, I mean, you know, he was complimenting her on her scientific technique, which she definitely had. I mean, she had a game plan going into this, and that's another thing that was very kind of interesting to me, because I was trying to kind of wrap my head around how the athletes were processing being a part of this. You know, seeing how that they've never done anything like this before, with the exception, of course, of Sam Shoemaker and Bobby Gunn. Yeah. You know, that's 98% of the card that has never done anything like this before.
And I mean,
they took to it like a duck to water.
Exactly.
They really did.
And I mean, I think I read somewhere, I think it was on Tapology, and I mean, forgive me if I'm wrong, but I saw that there were about three fighters on the whole card that ended up with broken knuckles. So again, the technique, the training was there, and it definitely showed. I mean, it was a great event. And do you have any idea when we might be able to see the next Bare Knuckle FC event?
They're talking August or September, late August, early September, I think is what they're talking about right now, because exactly what is happening now is exactly what I called what was going to happen. And that was the fact that Dave Feldman, the president of Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships, phone was going to be ringing off the freaking hook, because I knew exactly how people were going to approach looking at this and seeing if they wanted to be involved. They wanted to lay back in the weeds and see how it plays out on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
And if it's a home run, then they're going to be coming in drones to get involved in this. And that's exactly what's happened. In fact, I believe since from the time that the show ended to today, I think that there's been over 300 applications that have already been sent of fighters that want to get involved in this, and it could be conceivably more by now.
Wow. I mean, yeah, we've seen big growth in boxing. We've seen a lot in MMA in recent, you know, years and even months. And I've been talking a lot on the podcast with different guests how we've seen, you know, a lot of athletes cross over, whether it's from MMA to wrestling. And I mean, this is just an avenue for some of these fighters to cross over into, whether it's bare knuckle or even with ACB, where they're having ACB JJ. And I mean, you've got, from what I've seen, Diego Sanchez and Josh Emmett competing in that. So, even with ACB JJ, you've also got Yusuf Ryzov taking on Georgie Karakanyan coming up as well. So lots of different crossover events. Good for these fighters. It's an extra way to make some money and putting on a show for the fans as well. Like you had mentioned, that Joey Beltran, Tony Lopez fight. I mean, that's the cream of the crop, if you will, of fights that you guys could have had.
Well, I believe MMAfighting.com compared that fight as the bare knuckle equivalent to Forrest Griffin and Stephen Bonner.
Exactly. Yeah.
And I think that that's actually very astute. I think that that's a pretty good comparison. But the one thing that I like about this, you know, in MMA, what have you?
Yeah.
And then they come back in a different MMA capacity, and you're kind of saying that they're resurrecting their career. This is one of the things that I like about bare knuckle, is because there's no resurrection involved. It doesn't matter, you know, where you fought before, because you never did this to begin with. So how can you resurrect what you never did?
Exactly.
So that's why I love it. I mean, this is a new avenue, is what it is. People saying new era, and I've been actually saying that too. But I also call it a new avenue because a lot of fighters are going to get to find out something about themselves that they didn't know in boxing, MMA, kickboxing, or grappling by doing this bare knuckle. And because that they don't know whether or not that they're going to be successful in this, and they get in there and they find out, oh my God, I was born for this. Stars are born.
Exactly.
Look what happened with Sam Shoemaker. Look what happened with Sam Shoemaker. Sam Shoemaker went in there with a solid heavyweight in Eric Prydl, you know, former Bellator heavyweight tournament winner, you know, former Bellator heavyweight title contender. Went in there, looked awesome. 18 seconds later, with one punch, not three, not four, but one from way downtown, and that was the right thing for Big Dan to get in there. Big Dan absolutely 100% made the right call on that, because as you saw, you know, it took the canvas to wake up Eric when he did.
Yeah, and I mean,
the right call.
Well, even for Big, even
right call, and I think Sam Shoemaker, I think he's going to be a star
for sure.
Such a good look for bare knuckle boxing.
And even for Big Dan, I mean, it's got to be tough going from your traditional MMA and then crossing over to bare knuckle. But I'm sure with more events, we'll be able to see bigger names and stars emerge as well from this very first card.
Big Dan loved it. Dan loved it. Every celebrity that was involved with this promotion signed off on it. And it wasn't a signed off, you know, just to be nice to the promoter because maybe they feel differently about it. No. Everybody knew that they were at the beginning of something special, including myself. I said, well, I've got goosebumps upon goosebumps for this event, but as far as how I'm feeling as a professional, how the night's going to play out, I have no idea.
Yeah.
I have no idea. This is the first of its kind, and it was a gigantic risk that
for
David,
sure,
that David Feldman was taking, because he went through 28 sports promotions before Wyoming stepped up, said yes. So you have to figure all those people who, you know, looked at him and said, you know, what is this, a joke? I guarantee you those same people who were thinking that are now lining up and saying, you know what? We were wrong.
So, Jeff, where can somebody pick up one of your hybrid bow ties?
Yeah, I actually had a couple of people thinking that I was wearing a belt buckle, you know, across my throat. And I'm here to say that it is not a belt buckle. It's actually a custom 3D printed metal bow tie. Where can someone pick up on that? Well, I'm going to tell you, like the Colonel, it's a secret recipe.
Wow. I mean, I've been accustomed to seeing them in the ACB broadcast, but I guess to some of the fans in North America who aren't following ACB, it was kind of a surprise to see that. But they're definitely special for sure.
Well, the one in ACB is a little bit different. That one was actually a plastic one because I've got the little ACB across the tie, and that one, and I also have one for Rogue FC as well. It's something that I'm actually starting to pick up on my larger clients. Bare Knuckle will eventually probably get a custom one outside of the one that you saw on Saturday night.
Well, that's wonderful. And just to bring it back to ACB for a second, you know, we're talking world-class promotions. The one thing that I find that ACB does really well is that they stagger their cards in Russia and abroad, and we kind of spoke on this earlier. So what's it like to perform in front of the fans in Russia?
Oh, it was incredible. It was incredible. It was absolutely incredible. I mean, Moscow was a bucket list for me when it came to working shows. And the fact that I got to do it at the Olympic Stadium in front of 12, 13,000 rabid fans, and, you know, that card was built up as, you know, the best card in ACB history, and it was. It was absolutely fantastic. We did lose a couple of fans that were very, I think, instrumental to the integrity of the show. However, you know, just like everyone else, cards subject to change. So, I mean, that does happen. But let me just tell you, the change was done beautifully. The fights were flawless. The fans were into it. And the one thing that I definitely like about ACB, as the moniker says, less show, more fighting. We go in there, we don't take breaks, we push all the way through, we give them fights, we send them home happy.
Exactly. That was actually my next question for you. Is it tough to deal with their pacing? I know as a fan sitting at home watching, it's great. When one fight's over, you have a minute or so, and then it seems like the next group of fighters are coming to the cage. Is that difficult for you, or is it easy to manage?
Not. Are you kidding? Are you kidding? I actually prefer fast pace. It's not just to make an easy buck and get out of there. It's just I understand the attention span of your everyday person.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people don't want to stay there for 4+ hours. You know, 4 hours is even pushing it sometimes. So that's why I like the fact that we get in there, we give them what we want, and we get them out. As far as, like, for example, if we get a decision, I get that decision, and then maybe 2 minutes later, you know, we're going in, not even that sometimes, we're going into the next introduction. No. There's an old saying that there's no substitute for experience, so as much time as I've spent on the mic, the thousands and thousands of shows that I've done, I'm kind of prepared for anything. I mean, you could come in there with a gun and tell me this show is over. And you know what? I'd probably still put the guy with the gun over, and eventually he'd say, you know what? I don't really need this gun anymore. So go ahead, you know, let the show continue.
What promotion right now out in the world do you find does the best job from a production standpoint? Whether it's entrances, letting fighters develop a sense of individuality, or what one seems to do the best job right now?
Well, you know, I'm going to be honest. From what I've seen this far and how they're treated, I probably say right now, and I know that this may sound biased, but I think ACB and Rode FC are neck and neck when it comes to that, because ACB is all about the fighters as well as Rode FC. When it comes to the quality of production and how smooth everything works, I mean, I normally never have to ask anything of either promotion. You know, it's usually always, you know, sitting there waiting for me. And as far as production issues or rolling with the punches, working with ACB and Road FC, we've definitely had our share of production issues. But I'll tell you, to the live fans, you'd never know that we'd have a production issue, because we're that smooth at making sure that if this doesn't work, Plan B is like literally waiting, foaming at the mouth for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's awesome to hear. They both seem to put on great cards. You hardly ever see any issues. And like we had mentioned there, in Moscow, you had one title fight kind of off the card, but there were still another three title fights on there. So definitely great cards coming from them. And ACB 88 is definitely a must-see for fans out there. So, I mean, like we've said, you've been in the game for quite a long time. What's the biggest stage you've had the opportunity to announce fights on so far?
Well, you know, I've definitely cut my teeth in professional boxing as well. And I think the biggest thing, even though that, you know, I wasn't doing the main event, but just the enormity of it,
is when I was sharing the microphone with Jimmy Lennon Jr., and this was during the Austin Trout and Canelo Alvarez fight in San Antonio. We were close to about 50,000 people, and it was definitely a partisan crowd with Canelo because, you know, he's a huge draw in South Texas, and that was just an incredible moment, I think, when it came to... But if you're going to say the biggest show that I've ever done, I'm going to be honest with you. I still think that I'm going to kind of concede that. There are three of them, because it's hard for me to just pick one because there are others that I like for other reasons. You know, when anybody tells you, you know, select one that's your favorite, if you're a true professional, that's always hard to do because you may like something for another reason.
Yeah.
I would definitely say the Canelo one would be one. The Bare Knuckle FC one would be one. The Moscow show with ACB was just absolutely incredible. And the first show that I did in China with Road FC in Shanghai back in December of 2015 was just absolutely off the charts incredible. I mean, 14,000 fans. And it was also the beginning of the Road FC heavyweight tournament, in which, if you follow Road FC, you know that at the end of that tournament, the champion crown was Mighty Mo.
Exactly. And I mean, that's awesome to hear. You've been a part of so many big fights, and you know what? This week you finally got a week off. So what's the plan for this weekend? I mean, you've got UFC 225, Trout's fighting, Horn Crawford, Tyson Fury's back. What's the plan for you?
The plan for me is to see if it's time for CM Punk to pack up his gear and head back to the WWE. That one is going to be very interesting for me because, I mean, let's be honest. I applaud CM Punk for getting himself into the UFC and making more on his debut fight than anyone in the history of the business. I mean, he made $500,000, and he's never stepped foot in a cage or on a grappling mat a day in his life on a competitive sense. So, hey, I give him credit for that. And the guy he's fighting is actually a Texas guy, Mike the Truth Jackson. You know, Mike, you know, he's been going all over for years, and he's been covering MMA events. And, you know, then, you know, and he had also dabbled in fighting himself, and now he gets an awesome opportunity to be on the main stage with UFC. I mean, it's not too many people that you know that get a UFC opportunity at 0-1, but they had to match up CM Punk accordingly.
Yeah, and I mean, it's definitely going to be a good seller for them, having those two fighters on the main card. There's been a lot of people that have bellyached about them both being 0-1, but at the same time, I mean, it is CM Punk. And, you know, going into his last fight against Mickey Gall, if you watched any of the mini documentary series that were on YouTube.
You mean slaughter. You said fight.
Yeah.
Slaughter, that was not a fight.
No. I mean, watching him prepare and train, you got to give it to him. He was giving his all. But even in training camp and in the gym, he didn't look too solid, and his wrestling wasn't there. And I think that was what most people assumed he'd bring.
The reason that is because of the lack of his lack of competition.
Yeah.
Training is one thing. Competing is a completely different animal. And if you have absolutely no training, and if you have no background in that, then it's going to be very difficult for you to justify your existence on the largest fighting platform in the world. The only two that I could think of that were straight up name coasters were, you know, from WWE, CM Punk and Brock Lesnar.
Exactly. And you never know, we could see Brock Lesnar back in the UFC. There was talk earlier this year that he'd be back. But I'm going to take it. Yeah, exactly. I'm going to assume that on Fight Night Picks, Jeff Houston's picking Mike Jackson to beat CM Punk.
You know, I mean, you know what? We could be surprised. I'm not expecting that. You know, it just depends on if that first loss kind of sunk in and that inner competitiveness, you know, comes out and says, you know what? I wasn't ready for the first fight, even though I trained for it. And all the vignettes and everything make me look like a badass fighter. I mean, you know, he was going into a machine gun fight with a hand of rocks.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to be, again, maybe he might have two handfuls of rocks this time. I don't want to knock the man until I've had an opportunity to see him. And even then, I really don't want to knock him because anybody who steps into the cage automatically has my respect because whether you're seasoned or whether you're not, you're putting your life on the line. people can die in this. I mean, they absolutely can. I have nothing but respect for every fighter that's ever stepped foot into the cage. However, beyond that respect, whether you belong here or not, it's a completely different proposition.
For sure, and we'll get to see that this weekend. So, I mean, it was awesome to have you on, Jeff. It was great to get some of the behind-the-scenes knowledge from you. I mean, Bare Knuckle FC looks like it's going to take off. I mean, it was a home run this past weekend. ACB 88 coming up on June 16th, and then Road FC again on July 28th. I mean, where can people find you, Jeff?
Well, you know what? I should have been a little bit more prepared with my social media handle, knowing that I was going to be on the show today, so I apologize about that. But on Facebook, you can just find me, Jeff Houston, last name spelled just like the city. Twitter, Jeff Houston on that. And I think on Instagram, I'm JeffHouston03 is my handle over there. As far as my website, I'm actually working with a couple people right now because the previous website that I had, I didn't like because I felt it was kind of behind the times compared to how technical certain websites are. So I'm going through a couple of social media gurus, and we're trying to work and what I do. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I'm a confident man. I'm just saying I definitely believe that I am one of the best in the world at what I do. I mean, so many people can actually say that, but I go out there and I give a performance. I love every single second of it. And me saying that I'm one of the best in the world has absolutely nothing to do with my ego. It's because I know my competition. I know who's out there. I know what they give, and I know what I give. You say those names, Bruce Buffer, Michael Buffer, Jimmy Lennon Jr., Joe Martinez, Lupe Contreras, Jeff Houston is right there with them.
You're definitely at the top, and thanks so much, Jeff, for coming on. Good luck with all the fights coming up.
My pleasure, brother. Thank you for having me on.
All right. Thanks so much, Jeff. All right, how awesome was that? We got to have Jeff Houston on talking about Bare Knuckle FC. I mean, the sky's the limit for that promotion, as well as ACB and Road FC. Okay, it's time to make some picks. We've got a card coming up this Thursday. It's going to be airing at 8 p.m. Eastern, so that's 9 o'clock Atlantic. You've got the very first, and it says it right on their poster, MMA Reimagined Live, PFL. So it's pretty much a reimagination of World Series of Fighting. And so on Thursday, you've got featherweights and you've also got heavyweights on the card. So if we take a look down through your main event, you've got 17-0 Andre Harrison taking on 25-1 Dumbeki Turkshin. You know, Turkshin fought in the UFC. He fought, you know, names like Marcus Brumage, among others, and wasn't really able to make a great showing. I mean, let's see. Lost by decision, lost by submission, lost by TKO, and then he fought in WBK, some wins, some losses. So you're going to see Andre Harrison really push the pace. 17-0, trains with Gregor Gillespie. From what he said, you know, Gillespie's going to go out fishing until Thursday, and then he's going to come back to New York and watch this card. So should be a good main event for you in PFL. Something to note, Turkshin, you know, he's a professional kickboxer as well. You can find some of his tape out there, so it's gonna be a good fight, but take Andre Harrison in that main event. You've also got Lance Palmer taking on Bekbulat Magomedov. In that one, it's kind of tough. I mean, Palmer 12-3, he's fought the likes of Georgi Karakanyan, whereas Bekbulat Magomedov, he was with WSOF. He beat Jesse Brock, beat Donovan Frelo. So he's got a lot of experience. He also fought a little bit in M1 and had a great big win streak until he lost to Josh Hill in World Series of Fighting by split decision. So tough one to call there, but you know, relentless Bekbulat Magomedov should be able to come away with a win in that fight. Some other fights of note that are on the card, you've got some big names, whether they're competing in featherweight, there's some up-and-comers there. You've also got in heavyweight some former UFC names. You got Sean Jordan taking on Mike Kyle. That one there should be a win for Sean Jordan, put me on record. You've got Jared Rossholt, 15-4, taking on Valdrin Istrefi. He's 12-1. Kind of tough one to call there. Istrefi, you know, number one heavyweight in Germany, and he's been able to string some together. As well, you've got Josh Copeland taking on Jack May. You've also got former UFC talent Francimar Barroso, who's coming off a loss to Jean Valente at 19-7, taking on Daniel Gallimore. So it should be a good card altogether. And you know, it's going to be on NBC on Thursday night. So have a look at PFL. It's the very first event for them in a string of events. Moving right along, on Friday, you've got LFA 42. That's coming at you from Branson, Missouri. Headliner, you've got Derek Krantz taking on Cassius Kane. Krantz 21-10. You know, Kane's 12-4. Krantz fought in Bellator at one point. You know, he's got a loss to Andrei Koroshkov. He's fought in LFA Legacy FC for quite some time. He also fought Derek Campos at one point, another Bellator fighter as well. So it's a tough fight to score right now. I'll make my predictions again on Friday, so get ready for those. Also on the main card, you've got 8-1 Jaleel Willis taking on Chel Irwin Davis. He's 5-1. There's a lot of really good records, you know. 6-1, 3-1, 3-0, 2-1, 3-0, 4-0. And I mean, it goes down the list. So another great card by LFA. They really set it up well coming from last weekend where, you know, you had the three guillotine finishes to end LFA 41. Another card coming up this weekend that, you know, might be flying under the radar for some. You've got Brave Combat Federation. They've got a fight coming at you from Belfast, Northern Ireland. It's a rematch between Stephen Lohman and France Malambo. It's for their bantamweight title. So Lohman, he's 10-2. Malambo, you know, he's 5-2. Another name that you might recognize on that card, it's at lightweight. You got Norman Park taking on Miles Price. Price 10-6. Park, you recognize the name, fought in UFC at one point. 24-6-1. Let's go down through the list and look at some of the names that he fought at one point. You know, Rustam Khalibov, Francisco Trinaldo, Gleison Tebow, beat John Tuck. Park's still out there competing. You know, he just won in KSW here in the last few months. Had a unanimous decision win there. And he'd been competing in KSW for a little bit of time. So Norman Park on the card. Definitely something you might want to check out. And we'll have the predictions for you coming up on Friday. In the running for best poster and best promo video for this weekend, you've got KSW 44 coming at you from Ergo Arena in Gdansk, Poland. UFC was there last year, eh? So main event, you've got Carl Bedorf. He's 14-3, taking on Marius Pudzianowski. You know, he's 12-5. That's a heavyweight tilt. You've got two heavyweight tilts on that main card. A couple guys also 1-0 taking on 0-0. It's pretty much like a strongman competition in some of these fights. These guys are big, and it should be a really good event. That's going to be taking place Saturday at 10 o'clock Eastern, so it's a good one. I always like on Saturdays when there's a card at night, like, you know, UFC 225 in Chicago that I'm going to preview. But when you're able to watch some of the fights in the morning building up, I know I get excited when ACB will have a card on Saturday morning and then I get into the UFC, or when M1's able to have a card like they did this Friday and then it led us into UFC. It's really great to see some of those top level fights and then head right into some more of them. So KSW 44 coming at you Saturday at 10 o'clock Eastern. And before I get into what I'm sure everybody's been waiting for, you've got a lot of really good boxing fights this weekend. You've got Charlo Trout. You've also got Jeff Horn taking on Terrence Crawford. And Tyson Fury returns, and he's going to be fighting on Saturday. So we'll preview those, and we'll break those down. So this week's up-and-comer is actually somebody that's been competing in the UFC since 2014. Trains with Relentless MMA, American Top Team, one of the few fighters that you'll see from Bosnia-Herzegovina, actually fights out of either there or Lincoln, Nebraska. He's 12-1. His one loss is by knockout, and it actually comes from Darren the Damage Elkins. Our up-and-comer this week is Mirsad Bektik. If you have a look through his fights, had a lot of fights, a lot of amateur fights. I looked them up on Tapology, had about 9 of them, finished them all. And in his pro fights, he's finished 9 of 12 wins. So 12-1, 6 knockouts, 3 submissions, 3 decisions. The guy's great on the feet. Won his last fight against Godofredo Pepe, knockout, and that was a punch to the body. I mean, he's got rear naked submissions, ground and pound TKOs. He's fought guys like, I said, Pepe, Darren Elkins, Russell Doan, Paul Redmond, Chaz Skelly. So he's fought some names. He's finally fighting probably the biggest name in his career against Ricardo Lamas. And really, if you look at Lamas's last, you know, 4 or 5 fights, I mean, he had the Josh Emmett loss. Yeah, it was really bad. There was so much for him to lose. Emmett came in overweight, and I think, you know, Lamas was ranked 3rd in the division, lost by first round knockout. But I mean, before that, he'd beaten guys like Jason Knight, Charles Oliveira. His only real losses before that was to Max Holloway, Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo, Yuri Alcantara, Danny Castillo. So big names that he's lost to. And I mean, Josh Emmett, I mean, he lost pretty convincingly against Jeremy Stephens in his last fight. But Josh Emmett's among the top 10 in the UFC featherweight division and a really big guy for the division. But for Mirsad Bektik, it's his first big test against top competition. He's got the skills on the feet. His footwork's great. He's smart technically. His striking's really good. And if you just take that Godofredo Pepe fight from January of this year, I mean, he won it in the first round. So it's another fight for poor Ricardo Lamas that could really drop his stock a lot. But for Mirsad Bektik, it could really propel him up, you know, to that, I'd say, top six, five or six in the featherweight division in the UFC. So that's your up-and-comer for this week, Mirsad Bektik. Catch him fighting on the undercard of UFC 225 coming up this weekend on Saturday. And you know what? We might as well get into UFC 225. So on Saturday, 10 o'clock Eastern is when your main event's going to start. It's the rematch between Robert Whittaker and Yoel Romero. Of course, Whittaker was able to win a decision last summer against Yoel Romero. Romero was able to get the decisive win over Luke Rockhold in his last fight. He's been more active. Whittaker, of course, suffered a knee injury in the fight against Romero. And then he also, leading up to UFC 221 there earlier this spring, came down with some sort of stomach issue, which prohibited him to enter into competition. So we get to finally see the rematch. And this card, I mean, it just jumps off the page. All the names. Your co-main. You got RDA taking on Colby Covington. I mean, Covington's 13-1, and this is for the interim welterweight championship. RDA's reinvented himself after coming up from the lightweight division. You know, he's beaten some big names. Just beat Neil Magny, so should be a really great fight. You've also got on the main card Holly Holm taking on Megan Anderson in her UFC debut. That's at 145, so it's kind of possible that the winner of that fight would take on Cyborg for the title. You've got Andrei Arlovsky, who's kind of found a bit of a resurgence late in his career, taking on Tai Tuivasa, the undefeated Aussie. He's 9-0, won by knockout in his last fight. Also on the main card, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it today. I'm sure on later on in the week, my guest that I will have on will have enough to say about it. But CM Punk, 0-1. Taking on Mike Jackson, also 0-1. And that rounds out your main card. On the prelims, you've got two of the best heavyweights out there. Alistair Overeem taking on Curtis Blaydes. Curtis Blaydes, the hype train couldn't be going any quicker. And Overeem hasn't fought since his loss to Ngannou. So that's a great fight. Mirsad Bektik taking on Ricardo Lamas. You know, Lamas, his last fight, he lost to Josh Emmett. Mirsad Bektik, you know, he's 12-1. He's coming up through the featherweight ranks. Great fight there. You've also got Claudio Gadeja taking on Carl Esparza. Esparza's been on the win train. Gadeja, one of the better strawweights out there. You've also got Rashad Coulter at 8-3 taking on Chris De La Roca. You know, De La Roca, he's lost his last two fights. He was 4-0 at one point. Rashad Coulter, hit or miss, but he's a banger, and he loves the fight. So that's a great heavyweight matchup. You've also got the return to light heavyweight from Rashad Evans taking on Anthony Lionheart Smith. It's a tough one to call right now. If I had to predict it today, I'll tell you what, I'd pick the upset and I'd say that Rashad Evans is going to win that fight. So you're going to want to hear what I have to say about it on Friday. Also, on the prelims, you've got Sergio Pettis taking on Joseph Benavidez. It's a tough one because they're two top flyweight guys and they're going to be competing on the early Fight Pass prelims. So you got to have Fight Pass to watch that. I know Benavidez is definitely disappointed with that. You've also got late notice step up replacing Bobby Green. Charles Oliveira, 22-8, taking on Clay the Carpenter Guida. He's still swanging and banging at lightweight. And then the first fight on the card, you got Mike Santiago taking on Dan Ige. And I had the pleasure of seeing Dan Ige fight at UFC 200 against Julio Arce here recently. So that just about does it for the podcast today. You know, we had a great interview with Jeff Houston. We had a great interview with Tanner the Bulldozer Bozer. And I'll be back again on Friday to preview the fights and, you know, give more of my analysis and make my predictions. So I'd just like to thank Sisu Mouthguards, like to thank First Row Collectibles. If you head on over to iTunes and Stitcher, you can find me You can find me at Fight Night Picks on Twitter, Fight Night Picks on Facebook as well. And I'm also running a contest right now on both sites, so make sure you enter, giving away the brand new Fight Night Picks t-shirt. So we'll see you again on Friday.